from HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 28, recorded Monday, August 7th, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Codesmith Tools, makers of Codesmith, an extensible template-based code generator for .NET. And now Hansel Minutes listeners get $100 off Codesmith Professional with coupon code HM100, online at codesmithtools.com. Support is also provided by ExceedZip for .NET, which lets you handle zip, tar, and gzip files on FTP servers, in streams, in memory, and more. Now get 20% off any Exceed component or suite just for listening to Hansel Minutes. Just go to shrinkster.com/FPT and use the code HM-20-20. And don't forget to visit peterbloom.com. Start with better controls, finish with better sites. Online at PETERBLUM.com. And .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott discusses open source.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes. I'm here with Scott Hanselman, as I am every week. Hi, Scott.
How are you, sir?
We're talking about open source this week.
We are. That's a big topic, isn't it?
It is.
Big topic for a little podcast.
Is open source a crap idea? This is a blog post that you wrote.
Yeah, this is from a little while back. I just wanted to throw it out there and see what people thought. This is from March, and it was about an article in The Economist on open source, and it had an interesting graph that I thought was worth noting that was referencing the Apache community and the number of people having discussions about open source software, mm-hmm. about projects, versus the number of people actually writing code. And of course, the graph that shows the number of people holding discussions, the number of people talking was nice, you know, Y equals X, sharp 45 degree angle, and the number of code writers was tiny, tiny, tiny. You know, the number of people actually doing work in open source versus talking about it is it's a pretty dramatic ratio.
Seems to be more like a philosophical topic, right, for most people?
Yeah, I mean, everyone wants to use free software. Right. Everyone is consistently amazed if you download a copy of Ubuntu Linux and you go, holy crap, this is amazing.
Or just any really good free software.
Oh, yeah. But do you really think that it's free? Right. I mean, keep in mind that people are starting foundations in order to make this happen. Right. I mean, the guy that started Ubuntu is a billionaire for a reason. It's not just people in their garage in their spare time for the really big, awesome, amazing stuff. Right. So I just kind of wanted to talk about that and explore the idea that what does it mean to be free, right? There's a lot of really interesting discussions about that, particularly the good one at GNU.org, /H7A, the philosophy of free software, the discussion of what does free mean, right? Are we talking about free like gratis, like it's free, completamente gratis para ti? Mm-hmm. Or are we talking about free as in libre, as in to be free, to be released, to be free as in speech? Or right. Free as in beer, right? The free software definition, the Free Software Foundation says that free software is a matter of liberty, not price. So free speech versus free beer. And it says here, and it's in the definition, I'll just read part of the definition, that the freedom to run the program, the freedom to study the program, the freedom to redistribute the copies so you can help your neighbor, and the freedom to improve it. I think that's a really great definition of free software. When I think about the open source projects that I'm involved in, like DOSBlog, those are all the great things that I would like DOSBlog to be able to do.
Hmm. Now, what are your opinions about? I mean, I think you're forming them here, but what are your opinions about open source? I mean, you're an ASP.NET guy, you know, you're a Microsoft software guy. You make your living using Microsoft software, which is not open source, and yet you love to play around with Linux, and you know, you've been doing that for a long time.
It's a good question. I don't think that open source is necessarily a Linux thing, right? I mean, yes, Microsoft itself and their software is closed source, but didn't you think that when we got into the .NET world, something changed? There was a community, a sense of community around .NET. Lots of .NET code was released. There was a sense of sharing.
Not only that, Scott, but the sense of, do we really need the source code when we have tools like Reflector and we have inheritance and we, you know, do we want or need the source code?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, without an obfuscator, it's pretty, you know, the programmer's intent is pretty much there. So suddenly all of the different kind of what I call the horizontal things, you know, things that aren't specific or vertical to your business, all the horizontal things became commoditized. No one's going to make $1 billion on a new kind of text box or a JPEG decoder. But, you know, they might do something amazing with a JPEG once they've got it decoded, doing some kind of analysis on it. So the kinds of things you'd want to be free are that horizontal part, the base of the pyramid that you build your big giant thing on.
The operating system.
Yeah, operating system, big applications, suites of applications. But is it really, like, for example, here, let's look at Carilion, right? Carilion makes online banking software. That's the company that I'm the chief architect at. And something like 25% of the retail banking people in the U.S. use Carilion. We use open source software. That doesn't mean that Carilion's built on open source software. That means that there are pieces of things within the Carilion platform that's built on Microsoft that is open source, because is it really Carilion's job to write the next greatest logger? Or, you know, did Carilion need to be building a test framework? You know, we do e-finance. We do online retail e-finance. That has nothing to do with logging. So Microsoft didn't have a logger. Someone else out there made an awesome one. So then we looked at Log4Net, which actually gets into an interesting discussion about how do you incorporate open source into your life.
And like, licensing is the topic of that, right? Licensing?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a number of interesting links on licensing. Shrinkster/H7D up at the opensource.org site has a whole list of licenses, all the different kinds. It's more than just the GNU public, the GPL, the general public license. There's also the very popular BSD license, Berkeley license. There's, what do we have? There's piles and piles of licenses here that you can pick the one that you like, the Apache license.
Wasn't Sockets originally BSD? Sockets itself?
Berkeley Software, the guys at the Berkeley Software, that name comes up all the time. Whether it be in the context of sockets, so you used to say Berkeley Sockets,
right? And WinSock was based on that.
There used to be a thing underneath the stack in Unix that people would say, well, this is the Berkeley Sockets, or the BSD Socket API. Yeah. This was an API in Unix in 1983, 84,
right?
And it was the standard for sockets. And I don't know where it came from. I'm sure the Wikipedia would let me know. But that socket interface became a standard thing. And then the Berkeley software license is a different thing.
Okay. Just give us an idea of the main differences between, say, BSD and GPL. Because I've heard Microsoft say that they're not anti-open source, but they're anti-GPL.
Yeah, exactly. So GPL is what, if I understand correctly here, and it'll be very interesting to have a conversation with people who listen, that the GPL is what they call viral. In the sense that when the GNU public license is attached to something that you write, let's say I write a logger. That's probably not a very good example, but if I write a piece of software and then I extend it in some way, it is important for me to release the source for my extension.
Yes.
A really good example of this. Actually, here's a great example. The guys at SphiaSoft wrote we talked about them on our Linksys show, right? When we talked about extending the Linksys router.
Right.
They took some open source GPL software and extended it. But they put a great deal of money into it, and they extended it in a very large way. And there was an argument amongst them and a large number of the members of the community that they had not released that software in a very forthcoming way. So people said, well, they have broken the rules of the GPL license, and we demand that they release that software. And then it became this big pissing contest. Well, people would host copies of their source. And then, you know, so then the question became, what is it that those guys did? You know, what did they add? What is the benefit that they added? And what do they own versus what should be released back to the outside world?
Right.
So for people to do it in the correct way, the really classy way, I think a good example is what Joel Spolsky did. Joel Spolsky at Joel on Software wrote a thing called the Fog Creek Copilot. It's basically, they took VNC, right? VNC is a GPL'd remote desktop kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they wrote a really neat tool where you can go into copilot.com, you pay them like 10 bucks, and then for 24 hours, you can connect to remote machines and help your mom and do things like that. What's
right.
different from it versus the value added, what's different between it and the remote desktop stuff that's built into Windows is that Copilot goes through firewalls. So they basically wrote a NAT traversal, a network address translation traversal technique for VNC by extending tight VNC. So if you go up to copilot.com and then you click on their FAQ and you go to the bottom, it says, how do I obtain the source code, right? They built a whole business model around this. They put a lot of work into it. They had four interns working for a summer on this thing. But at the bottom, they said, hey, here's a copy. You can click. They've got a zip file all prepared. They only make you click in two places, and then boom, the source is there. So then the question is, well, how would they make any money?
Well, they make it by charging people to use the service, which is what you said
exactly.
before.
It's the service. It's the key exchange. I mean, you can go and see their source. They released it to the world. They put a great deal of work and value into it, but the business model isn't truly and completely dependent on the source. So some people, though, feel much more strongly that their source is really the big intellectual property. So they'll get into a trap where they'll start up working on something on open source GPL licensed software. They extend it and they go, wow, I really added some value. That's not something I want to give out to the world. And then that's where you get into the trouble.
And the BSD license is different?
I believe that the BSD license is a lot more relaxed. The GNU license is like 3,000 words, and the BSD license is like 300 words. So the BSD license is basically, this has no warranty. It's pretty much as is. There's no way we're going to be liable for anything. And go ahead and do your thing. Enjoy yourself and don't bother us.
And you don't have to re-release changes and modifications free.
People believe that the BSD license is more free than the GPL, because the BSD says they can do anything they want to.
Okay.
I mean, BSD is darn near public domain.
What is the whole free as in beer thing?
Well, okay,
free
so free... yeah, so if you go to /H7C up at the Ward Cunningham Portland Pattern Repository, free as in beer is the idea of, you go to a party and there's free beer. That's it. You pick it up, you drink it, you're cool. You don't have to pay for it. You don't have to think about it. And it has no maintenance, right? So free software, people always say, well, how free is this? Is it truly free? I can do anything I want to with it? Or is it more kind of free as in speech? So that differentiation between free as in speech that we talked about before, libre versus gratis.
What strikes me right off the bat about this is that everything is free as in speech, because speech is free under the law. You know, you have the right to use software. You have the right to buy software, whether it's free or not. You have the right to use it, don't you?
Well, so you have the right to use it, but the trick is the source code available to the users? And can you redistribute the source code? Right? So free software is anything that you can run, study, redistribute, or improve, right? Now, when you add something like GNU, you're taking all of those things and then you're adding the source code absolutely must be available to the users, right? You cannot use this. You cannot give this software away without giving the source away as well.
Right.
And here's the trick. And you cannot sell it.
Yes.
You cannot redistribute it under a different license.
Right.
And that's where you get trouble.
Yep.
You know, we've seen... and this is why Clemens rather made the decision to distribute DOSBlog under BSD. Nutelligence, the company that Clemens Vasters worked for when they started the DOSBlog project under the guise of Nutelligence Corporation, said, we reserved the right as Nutelligence to take this, improve it, not release the source and make money on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can too.
Hmm.
So we've had companies say, well, we're interested in extending DOSBlog and making money on it. And we say, that's cool and good for you.
Yeah.
Right, we wish you would give the source out, but it's
right.
not viral. We're not going to take your improvements and force you to return it.
Okay.
So what open source software do you use? I mean, we use Log4Net, NANT, NUnit, Ncover.
I use VNC. I use that quite a bit. In fact, we're using it right now in our class that Miguel Castro is here teaching. We have three people in the classroom and three people remotely. So, and the remotes use VNC to watch his screen.
Slick. Now, have you personally given any source code back to an open source project? Have you patched something?
No.
Is that because you haven't found a bug, or it's just because
it's a
hassle?
No, it's just because it's not what I do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there was a big discussion. You're asking the wrong guy.
No, that's cool. Yeah. So there was a big discussion between myself, Phil Hack, Jeff Atwood, about, you know, is open source free like a flower? Phil said it was free like a flower, /H76. Basically, you know, you get to look at it and smell it and enjoy it, and there you go. It's all about, you know, love and apparently flowers. I don't particularly think that's a very good analogy. I said that it was free like a puppy because it requires care and feeding. You have no guarantee when you get an open source piece of software that it may disappear. The guys that are writing it, you know, we just saw with the NDoc, a lot of confusion about this NDoc thing.
NDoc goes away.
Well, so this is the thing, though. It went away in the sense that the gentleman who was working on it has decided to no longer work on it. Mm. But there's still a large team, right? There's still a fork. This is another thing that happens with open source software is when it forks, right? So NDoc was on 1.3. Somewhere out there is some NDoc 2.0 code, but 1.3 has been improved, and they've got it working on .NET 2.0. Mm-hmm. And then you've got things like Sandcastle, when Microsoft comes out of nowhere with their, you know, blank killer. So for NANT, it was MS Build. And for NDoc, it appears to be Sandcastle, which is the new document builder from Microsoft.
Right.
So I said that it was free like a puppy. And then Jeff Atwood from Coding Horror at /H77, he said, if open source software required as much effort as raising a puppy, your local pound would be even more full than it already is.
Mm.
So I was basically saying, I think we as developers, I mean, think about this. Just the fact that we're listening to this podcast, or we're blogging, or we're even reading blogs, means that the group of developers that our peer group, you, me, the people listening, the people who blog, are already at an echelon or an upper level of developer in consciousness, in the sense that they are thoughtful, interested in improving themselves and becoming better programmers. They're already at a level of quality, at least that they are trying to improve themselves when so few do, right? There's the what I call 501 developers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, hey, it's 501. Can I punch out?
Yep.
So I was proposing that it is important for us to give back to the community. And I think that the best thing that you can do to give back to the community is fixing bugs. I did a little article on how to contribute a patch to an open source project without being the administrator at /H75. And a lot of really interesting discussion came up around it because Jeff believes the whole point is to save us time, just to keep us from rewriting software. So for him, open source equals reuse, right? Well, you know, for me, open source is more of a gift. And I don't think it's a good idea to just take that gift and not give something back. So I think that if it were just incredibly easy to contribute a patch to an open source piece of software, that would make life a lot easier. I think that often I'll download a piece of software and maybe a bug will happen, and then I'll see like a call stack. It'll even show me the line number, and I'll dig into it for 5 minutes and I'll go, oh, wow, he's messing with a null there. Mm. You know, if there was a button to push or a way to fix it or let him know that this is something that is easily fixed, that's great. It's amazing to me how people will file bug reports with detailed information about exactly what went wrong, complete reproduction instructions, but they won't bother to fix it. Now, the argument is, by Jeff and some of the detractors, is that that's unrealistic. That the amount of time it would take to learn that particular piece of software, to poke around and to figure out how it fits in with the other pieces, it's just unreasonable to expect someone to jump in on a piece of software like that.
Right.
I can see that point of view, but I don't think that that's a blanket point of view. There are times when you can find something obvious and fix something obvious, and that's a really great way to give back.
I have a question for you, Scott. I'm sure there are lots of listeners of Hansel Minutes, .NET Rocks, whatever, people that follow our shows.
Both of them.
And they have little pet projects that they've started. Maybe they're components, maybe they're utilities, you know, software. But like most of the software that we write and mess around with, it just goes in a hierarchy in our disk somewhere, archived forever. What advantage, if any, would we have in taking those pieces of software in whatever state they're currently in, which might not be completely working, and release them under a public domain license, put up a site and say, all right, have at it. Anybody want to jump on here and take over? There you go.
You know, that's a really great question. And then that, for me, there is a hierarchy of open source projects, right? Is this something that a group of people are going to be excited about, interested in, enough in that they're going to stick with it for a while? Is it a snippet, an applet, a technique, or is it an application?
Mm.
You know, I think that places like Code Project, while I've called codeproject.com a bathroom wall of software before, it is a self-moderating place. You know, the cream rises to the top there.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Code Project and you find a highly rated, highly thought of, you know, obviously maintained article with a technique released as open source, I think that, you know, lots of people out there might have a chunk of code that they could put up there, write a quick article, and if it's great, people will discover it and it'll rise to the top.
Well, I've done this myself. I have a lot of little projects that demonstrate how to do things. Some are demos and some are actually full-blown components that I've just released on my Franklin's Net website with source code without any license whatsoever. Just here, take this, use it. And, you know, I never even thought about if you have anything to contribute back to it, you know, what do you do? So, I mean, I guess that's where the whole license thing is very helpful because, you know, I'm sure somebody would like to modify it and they'd probably end up emailing it back to me so I could put it up on the site again. But, you know, there isn't any formal structure around that. Is there a benefit to a developer to doing that? Or should we just keep these things to ourselves, I guess?
I think it's about size.
Yeah.
I think if it's small, you should put it up somewhere like a forum like Code Project. If it is a pretty good-sized application, mm-hmm. I think that somewhere like CodePlex or SourceForge or OpenQA or any of the many open-source hosting places you can put stuff at
mm-hmm.
is a good idea, except you don't want it to be orphaned, right? You want it to just disappear.
Right.
More and more, I'm noticing groups of folks getting together and little kind of mini consortiums and releasing tools.
Hmm.
So putting together a formal tool site, like you notice that, you know, Roy Osherov has been releasing tools for years and then recently just said, you know, I need a tools.osherov.com to put all this stuff at. You know, maybe it's time for a tools.franklin.com.
Right.
And then maybe it's time for some kind of search engine specific to that kind of stuff, because these are projects, but they're not necessarily big enough.
Or popular enough. I mean, you know, a lot of the ones that I have are components, you know, but I have some really interesting things. Like, for example, voice over IP. I've got a solution for that. I mean, I have a voice over IP solution that works pretty well, and I've just been sitting on it. MIDI.
Well,
MIDI input and output. I've got that.
Well, here's an idea. There is a site.
Popcatcher. Here's another one.
There is a site called projectdistributor.net
mm-hmm.
that Darren Niemke has got up there. It's literally just projectdistributor.net. And mm-hmm. basically, if you don't have a blog and you have some source, you're not really interested in building a community, and you want to throw it up somewhere and have it hosted,
yeah,
projectdistributor.net has dozens and dozens of projects. You can group them. You can add administrators. You can have multiple releases.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just basically a place to store your zip files. So if you've got some intellectual property and some thoughtful stuff and you want to throw it out there, I think that's a great place. It sounds like a lot of the stuff that you've got could belong up somewhere like that. I would put a license on it though.
Right.
You know, without a license, it's kind of found stuff. Even if the license is, I'm not liable for you ruining your life with my source code.
So then would you go to www.opensource.org/licenses or shrinkster.com/h7d? Is that where
exactly.
you would start?
I would go up there and I would pick one that made sense to you. I think that the BSD license is the kind of the closest thing to the don't sue me and enjoy kind of license.
Right. And if somebody wants to use it in a commercial product, that's totally okay.
Yeah, because understand, when you put source code out like that, you know, you might want to say, I'd like my name in the source code.
Right.
You know, there are licenses that basically say, don't remove my name, make sure that I get credit. You know, this copyright notice must remain unchanged.
Or what about a license that says, you know, you feel free to use it, but if you're going to use it in commercial software, you need to, you know, work out a royalty arrangement with me or something. Is there that?
Yeah, those licenses exist. You can do, there's various modified versions of all these different licenses. Hmm. There's a whole series of them up at the opensource.org licenses site. And you can certainly, you know, write your own, but chances are someone else has already thought of it.
Yeah.
Or you can just be, you know, really awesome and just give your software away. Like if you go to sliver.com, you know, Jeff Key has been putting up little applets up there in zip files full of source for years. It's a treasure trove of .NET goodness. And he just basically throws them up there and they are amazing applications, applets. Often he'll write an article around them and put the article up on MSDN. I mean, he's almost kind of a one-man source forge.
Okay.
You could certainly do that, but get it out there. I mean, if you've got code on your hard drive, put it out there. Google will find it eventually.
So looking at our list of links, what haven't we talked about yet?
Let me see. We talked about contributing a patch. If you're involved in an open source project, mm-hmm. or maybe that you are using some software, make sure that you read about how to contribute a patch, because chances are you may have found a bug and chances are you know how to fix it. /H75. Also, if you use things like CVS or Subversion, we've got a tutorial on how to use what are called universal diff files or patch files at /H74.
Okay.
And, the Wikipedia, even though it is managed by the people, has some very good information on different kinds of licenses. I've read all the different, articles it has on, specifically on software licensing. And for the most part, it's very well written. It's very thoughtful and it offers a fairly balanced view of the different licenses as well as the BSD versus GPL, arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, just get involved. Remember that when you download software, that is free and use it, someone probably spent a weekend or many weekends working on that stuff. You know, even if you just think about it and think, wow, hey, thanks, guy, or drop them a note like, what is it? I think it's Slick Run, my favorite
Slick Run
launcher. It's got, I think it's the, as you install it, he pops up a dialogue that says, you know, fill out this survey and tell me what you think. You know, will you reward the developer with a single minute of your time? I think what a thoughtful way to do that is, even if it's complimentware or postcardware, you know, do that. Don't just download it and then get pissed off because it doesn't work the way you want.
Okay, Scott. Well, that really opened my eyes a bit to the world of open source. I hope that the listeners have been educated as well. As always, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
All right. And we'll see you next week on Hanselman's.